realfaith.org.au.
On Australia's Got Talent, I dressed up as the mascot and I sang Mustang Sally, which I thought was ironic, being the horse. Took my head off and they thought I had a bit of talent, and I got through the semi-finals. And then they said, we weren't so convinced this time round. and that's where my reality TV experience ended. But I guess that was probably the precipice of a crash.
Welcome to Real Faith. Conversations about the impact faith has on our lives and the challenges we go through. Helping us today and giving us hope for tomorrow. That's Real People, Real Life, and Real Faith with Eric Scatterbo.
Our guest today says that every day we put on masks, which is kind of ironic because he has put on a literal mask for years as the mascot for the Brisbane Broncos. But of course, that's not really the kind of mask he's talking about. Welcome to the program, Justin Gange.
Hey, how you doing?
Real good. Glad to have you with us. And so you're a mascot.
Yeah, look, it's been 20-odd years suiting up, trying to put smiles on people's dials. So it's been fun.
How did you get that?
Look, a little bit of nepotism. My mates were doing it many years ago, and they had so many mascots at the game. They said, oh, you know, do you want to come and hang out and chuck a suit on? And back then I was a post box and worked my way up to... Yes. It was, not real glamorous, but it was a bit of fun.
Now, you had to say to yourself, I am a post box.
Yes.
I don't know. Where do you go from there?
Oh, look, it's about, it's like in life, anything. It's about being the best that you can be with what you got in your hands right at that moment. So it's like, I'm going to be the best post box that I've ever seen.
Well, I imagine you were a wonderful post box because you were then promoted up the ladder.
That's right. Yeah. I was a cowboy hat after that and then a bull. And then
keeps getting better and better.
I know. I finally got to be the horse. Back in 2000, and been doing that ever since up until this year. So, yeah, it's been good.
Okay, well, turning to more serious topics,
You
had this quote saying, every day we put on masks. So, obviously, there's a more serious side to this whole idea of putting masks on.
Yeah, look, absolutely. I struggle with my own mental health, and I'm the entertainer amongst my friends and all that, and so even when I was doing it tough and down, I'd had to be the life of the party, the person that would make people smile, even though I wasn't feeling that on the inside. And so, I guess the metaphor there of putting on a mask is there's a bit in that for all of us, I guess.
Isn't it interesting that so many stand-up comedians and other entertainers have metaphorical demons in their lives and struggles with mental illness?
Yeah. Look, and more of that is coming out, and it's really tough, and it's about being real though. For me now, it's about taking off the mask and being pretty transparent with who I am.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, let's find out your story. Let's go back to your childhood. You grew up in New Zealand?
I did. I was born at an early age.
that's nice.
Yeah, my dad was my hero. He used to put on big neighborhood events and sing and eat and all that sort of stuff. And so from a very early age, I wanted to be like my dad and entertain people and make people smile. And so that's what I did. I sang in pubs and clubs as a young fella, and but with that came its own challenges, sort of battling depression and battling suicide attempts and alcoholism and things like that from an early age.
Now, can we go back further?
Yeah.
I mean, if you were doing what you enjoy, being like your father, making people happy, then why would there be depression? Someone could ask.
Yeah, look, it's kind of like a false economy. You get to the state where you love the adulation of the crowd. There's nothing better than, applause and, you did a great job and everything like that. And, so you're living in that bubble. And then when you get off the stage, there's no applause. There's no, no adulation. And, all of a sudden you're left with your own thoughts and you wonder, am I really worthy of that? And that's where I was. I wasn't the greatest singer by any stretch of the imagination, but I did enjoy the joy that it brought people, but it was having a real negative effect on myself.
So you were a singer, and how did you come to Australia?
Yeah, look, there was one suicide attempt where I pretty much was in a coma for a while, and the first thing that I said out of that coma when I came to was that God didn't want me. And I wrestled with that. I wasn't a Christian or anything like that at that stage, and I wrestled with that that thought, that statement that I made coming to. And obviously, when I look back, I think of Jeremiah 29:11. You know, for I know the plans I have for you, plans are good, not for evil, that you may have a future and a hope. And I didn't realize at that time that God had a plan for my life. But I ended up going to a psychiatric hospital for a number of months. And my cousin, he was playing in a band called the Newsboys over in America. And,
Newsboys?
The Newsboys, yeah. So wow. He was a guitarist, with the Newsboys back in the early 90s. Late 80s, wow. Early 90s. And, he wrote me a letter and he said, Justin, you don't have to go through all these things that you're going through. See, I was trying to fill my life with, you know, all sorts of things, relationships, you know, this weird religion I created, drugs, alcohol, all those sort of things, trying to fill a void in my life. And he wrote me this letter saying, you know, God loves you and, you know, he's got a place for you and he's got a plan for your life. And I did what every person in an institution does. I showed the letter to everyone and I mocked my cousin. but there was a seed in something he sent me. And so when I left the institution, I went home and there was a little Calvary Baptist church around the corner from where I was. And, I just started turning up. Because I was searching. I was really empty and I gave my heart to the Lord, in that little Calvary Baptist church after a number of weeks of inquiry. And from that day, all of a sudden, things began to change. And I got a call from a cousin saying, hey, look, I'm back in Australia and, we're starting a band up. Would you be interested in auditioning for the band? And you didn't have to ask me twice.
Oh, wow.
I sold everything I had. I came to Australia. I auditioned for the band and no, I wasn't very good, mate.
He asked you. I mean, he must have saw something.
Yeah, look, I auditioned and it didn't really work out. And so I was stuck in Australia and for the first time I had to get a real job to sort of pay my way. And that's how I got to Australia.
Oh, okay. Now, could we back up a little bit?
Yeah.
Before you put your faith in Jesus, did you have a religious background or a spiritual background?
No. Look, as a young fella, I remember my neighbors took me to Sunday school a couple of times, but that was pretty much the extent of it. No one in our family was really religious or anything apart from my cousin's side of the family. But, it was just I'd searched for so long to fill that gap that was evident in my life that I thought, well, I've tried everything. I might as well give this a go. And the more that I went, the more questions that I had, and the pastor was able to answer those questions. So, that was the start of the journey.
And so you went from believing that God didn't want you to believing he died for your sins and became your Lord and Savior.
Absolutely.
So that must have been a significant change in your life.
It changed my whole viewpoint on the world. It was one of those sort of surreal moments. It almost seemed like this is destiny. It was planned. This is meant to be. And looking back, I can see it was God's plan. God's plan for my life.
Our guest today is Justin Gange, who is sharing about his lifelong struggles with mental illness. Next, we'll find out how this eventually leads to a suicide attempt and then a miraculous intervention by God. That and more when we return right here on Real Faith.
The Word for Today is Australia's most widely read daily devotional, designed to give you practical teaching to keep you focused on your relationship with Jesus. Read it online or subscribe to the free printed edition at thewordfortoday.com.au.
You're listening to Real Faith, conversations with real people about how God works in their lives. If you want to know more about integrating faith into your life, our website is realfaith.org.au. Just go to the website and you'll find helpful articles about the impact faith can have on your life. Once again, that's realfaith.org.au.
Welcome back. I'm Eric Scadabo, and my guest today is Justin Gange, who's sharing his life story. As we heard before the break, Justin struggled with mental health issues in his younger years growing up in New Zealand. But after he became a Christian, things seemed to be going well for him. Okay, so now you're in Australia. What happens next in your story?
Look, I was doing some incredible. At church, I was really getting involved in church. I'd be on the evangelism team, and we'd go and visit prisons, and I'd share my story in prisons, and share my story on the streets with people like Mad Dog Mugford and all these different people that have, you know, had those challenging backstories, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And I just loved it, and just interacting with people and helping people that were in tough spots. And I got into the music side of church, and so I. You know, and kids' church as well. Anything that I could do, I was doing it, and I was really passionate, and God was just blessing me. Like, as I said, I didn't really have any sort of working background, but I ended up getting an apprenticeship as a plumber back in 94, and I met my wife in the church, and we got married in 94, and 94 was also the year that I started mascotting for the Brisbane Broncos. So it was a big year. It was,
oh, wow.
God was just blessing me, and looking back, it just continued to bless me over the years as I was being faithful to his call on my life.
So that's the end of the story. Everything's fine and rosy. No problems ever again in your life?
Oh, no. I'd love for that to be. Wouldn't it be nice? Yeah. No, not the case. I was doing so well at work. I climbed the ladder where I became one of the 20 top employees, the next generation in the organization of 10,000 that would, you know, be in top level management. So I was doing really well at work. And I was doing well with my mascotting, and I was doing well in the church, and I began to lose track of my walk with God, and I actually started to believe that I was, you know, the master of my destiny, and so I started walking away from the bread and butter of doing life every day with God and doing life every day with Jesus, and so I started thinking I was amazing and leaving God out of the equation. And 2012 came along, and I thought I was invincible, and I ran for state politics, and I went on Australia's Got Talent, and
What did you do for them?
Oh, look,
I mean, mascotting, or what did you?
Yeah, yeah. So on Australia's Got Talent, I dressed up as the mascot, and I sang Mustang Sally, which I thought was ironic, being the horse.
You sang while in the costume.
While in the costume, took my head off, and they thought I had a bit of talent, and I got through the semifinals, and. And then they said, we weren't so convinced this time round. and that's where my reality TV experience ended. But, I guess that was probably the precipice of a crash, impending crash, because I was doing all of this out of my own strength. And as a result, it wasn't sustainable. And I crashed at the end of 2012. I was doing it so tough that my boss kept taking me out going, oh, you know, you okay? What's going on?
What a wonderful boss you have.
Oh, he's incredible. Yeah, yeah, absolutely incredible human being. Took me out so many times that I had to go on to skim milk because I was starting to bloat. just kept asking me. And a typical bloke, you know, I said, no, I'm okay. But I couldn't say it anymore, and I said, no, I'm not doing okay, mate. And so he said, I think we need to make a call. And so I called my doctor, GP, and they said, you know, think you need to talk to a psychologist. And I'd been seeing a psychologist on the side because I was doing it tough. And she said, yeah, I think you need to go to your local hospital. And in the hospital, they put me into the psychiatric ward unit of that of my local hospital. And
wow, I mean, that happened pretty quick. Can we just back up and ask, were there any outward manifestations that he was seeing? He obviously was concerned that he took you out to lunch.
Yeah. I was, as I said, I was the clown. I was the one that would, you know, make people smile. And all of a sudden, I was the person hanging around in the corners
So he saw a definite personality change.
Yeah, yeah. I was withdrawn when I wasn't entering into things like I usually do. I was distracted. My whole personality changed. And so it was from that he had real concerns. And that's, you know, when he started taking me out and saying, come on, mate, I'm noticing you're not doing so well.
And then, as you mentioned, things just went very quickly to being admitted to a psychiatric ward.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, sitting there in the emergency department of my local hospital and dressed in my suit with all this white noise going on in my head and, feeling the shame of, being this business person, this person that's, highly involved in church, and I've just let everyone down. And I felt shame, I felt guilt, and I again felt, the need not to be around for my family.
Now, that just sounds like what the devil would want you to think.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You're no good. Life would be better off without you, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
And is that common in mental illness that type of thoughts come to people's minds?
Yeah, absolutely. The whole, the devil comes to steal, rob and destroy, and that's where I was at. I'd walked so far away, and I didn't even realize it, mate. And I'd walked so far away from, spending every day with God that I ended up not realizing that I was working in my own strength, and I'd gone down those roads again.
And then were you diagnosed?
Yeah, so look, they had me in the the ward there, and they questioned me and talked with me and everything like that, and they said we think you've got bipolar type 2, which is a mental illness. Now I was treated for that as a kid. I wasn't diagnosed as a teenager because they were loath to do that back in the old days. So I was diagnosed there in that psychiatric ward and medicated accordingly. And I was definitely right at the part of the lowest ebb of my life. I had a wife, two beautiful girls, had two girls through IVF through this whole awesome period of my life. And so a loving family who loved me, who are awesome. And here I was letting them all down and letting the devil have his way with my thought life.
But in reality, and now looking back over your whole life, you had a mental illness, which from time to time would manifest itself.
Yeah.
So it wasn't your fault. It was an illness.
Yeah, absolutely. And, we talk about, having a broken leg, equating, a mental illness to just like having a broken leg. You do things to accommodate for that. And so, not being diagnosed until I was 40 years old was quite a confronting sort of time for me. But it gave me a little bit of understanding that, maybe, if I treat this right, things will get better. And and so that's what I did. I went back to work not long after my hospital admission, and then another hammer from the side. I was going to be losing my job of 20 years, and so all of a sudden, not only was I coping with a new diagnosis, a new lifestyle change, it was now. And by the way, you won't be able to work for us anymore. And that shook me because I had a real perception in my head that this is all I could do. I was good at it, but who would want to employ, a chubby 40-year-old who'd spent the last 20 years in an organization and now has a mental illness? Who would want to employ me? Hmm. And so, again, the lies of the enemy coming into my head, thinking that the best thing that I could do for my family would be to activate my life insurance and take my life. And I went back there, and on the 1st of August 2013, that's the path I tried to take.
So yet another suicide attempt.
Another suicide attempt. And again, another God intervention. I sent an email, the modern-day technology, to my wife, my boss, and a friend, And I apologize. I apologize that I wasn't the father that I should be, the husband that I should be, the employer, the friend. And I said goodbye. And and that was it as far as I was concerned. But my boss got straight on to my wife and said, look, we need to get the police involved and try and find him. And because no one knew where I was. But my wife said, you know what, I've got a gut instinct. I've got something going on that says I want to search in one particular place. And she got our friend in the car and they drove for an hour down to a spot on the southern beaches of Queensland and pulled into the car park, and there's my car, the first car they saw. So just a miracle that they found me. And they try to get me out of the car. I'm, you know, supermodel good looks, but heavy bones. And so they couldn't get me out of the car. And next thing, a car pulls up beside them, and it's a big Polynesian nurse from one of the hospitals. And he picks me up like a rag doll and throws me out onto the ground. And my wife starts, you know, slapping me across the face, trying to get a response. And they did. They got to me in time. And miracle number two. And the ambos pull in, and they said, when someone doesn't want to be found, they don't get found. So miracle number three, God intervened.
Yeah. So now this mental illness has obviously been really, really impacting your life to the point of attempting suicide again.
Yeah.
What has changed? What happened?
Look, whenever we make a decision in life, we justify it. You know, I brought this TV because it was cheap, or I sent my kids to this school because, you know, they have a great sporting curriculum. And so what I found myself doing when I came to again was I began to justify why I did what I did. And all my friends and all the people I worked with, they were coming and visiting me and sending me messages saying, why? We don't understand. You're the one that we come to when we're doing it tough. Why? And so I began to justify and explain. And as I shared my story, it actually gave permission to all my friends to start sharing their stories, to be a bit more transparent with, you know, oh, look, yeah, I'm struggling with this, or I'm battling with self-worth or depression. Or and the more I started sharing, the more other people were sharing with me their stories. And I realized, hang on, maybe I've gone through what I've gone through to be able to have conversations with other people that are doing it tough. Mm-hmm. And the more that I began to share, the more it opened up for other people to share, and I realized that, yeah, this is a tough road, but God has me here for a reason. He's intervened so many times for a reason that I can be there for other people and help other people when they've been doing it tough, whether it's battling a mental illness or battling some of life's tough stuff, and being able to, you know, do life with them and be real and be transparent.
Yeah, let's talk about that. What have you been doing along these lines?
Yeah, look, I've been a community ambassador for AOK Foundation, going around sharing my story around the country. But I've also, I'm a plumber by trade, and so I'm passionate about, you know, crusty old tradies, and been fortunate enough to sort of share my story a lot with within the construction industry. And as a result, I now work for a charity called Mates in Construction, where we'll go onto construction sites and we'll talk about mental illness and we'll talk about suicide prevention. But we'll talk about, you know, how to look out for your mate when they're doing it tough, and how to connect them to, you know, that help. And so it's been a privilege to be able to, you know, be with people when they're right at their lowest ebb and help them get through that. And, yeah, so it's been a real privilege. And a friend of mine, you know, says it took you to get to your lowest point to be able to find out what God's purpose was for your life.
Wow. So now you can be a blessing to others and help others kind of recognize the signs before they go down the avenue that you went down.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's, you know, it's not rocket surgery. It's pretty, it's a pretty sort of simple concept. It's about, you know, looking out for each other, you know, looking out for your mates, looking out for the people that you care about, and noticing when they're doing it tough, and, you know, praying with them or being with them, or, you know, taking 10 seconds of courage to have a real hard conversation with someone that you care about.
Well, let's talk about that. Let's kind of wrap up our conversation here. What are the big lessons that we can learn from all of your experiences?
Yeah, look, I go back to, you know, God has a plan for us all. You know, if you are doing it tough, there is hope, and the hope that I have in God that I walked away with, you know, God's grace still was there for me. And if you are doing it tough, reach out. But a lot of the times we're not so good at reaching out. So we talk about, you know, if you're a mate and you know you've got a mate that's doing it tough, or you've got someone that's doing it that you care about that's doing it tough, reach out to them. Let's be people that care enough to notice. You know, I was at church sitting in the back row or sitting over in a corner. You know, be Jesus to the community, be Jesus to the world, and have those conversations by the well. You know, take that 10 seconds of courage to be Jesus in a hurting world.
Justin Gange, thank you so much for sharing your story with us today.
Thanks for having me, mate. It's been a privilege.
Our guest today has been Justin Gange, sharing his journey with mental illness and suicide attempts. If you're listening today and can identify with any of the things he's gone through and would like someone to talk to, do not hesitate to call Lifeline at 131-114. That's 131-114. Also, as Justin mentioned earlier, he's involved with an organization called Mates in Construction. They're dedicated to preventing suicide in the construction industry. Their website is matesinconstruction.org.au. That's matesinconstruction.org.au.
You've been listening to Real Faith, and if you have any questions or comments, you can send us a message through our website, realfaith.org.au. That's realfaith.org.au.
This program is a production of Vision Christian Media. To find out more about us, see vision.org.au.